Okay, here we are. Welcome back, hour number two. Things continue to move along, and the direction they seem to be moving along is an unfortunate direction. We are sensing, and maybe some of you are noticing it, more and more stories about people who are reporting they've lost two, three, four, five more family members to these injections. And we're getting more reports all the time of people who are suffering now, the same general profile, almost on the same platform as if they had gotten injected, even though they haven't. They've just been around the injected, and they've gotten shed upon. And that shedding sticks. It doesn't go away. Don't think of this as a virus or a bacteria in terms of shedding, although that is certainly a possible transmission factor, the virus. Think of it as proteins, and do a little research and look up and see how small proteins are and why they are easily aerosolized and transmitted epidermally from person to person, a hug, a cheek-to-cheek hug, a wet kiss, as they say. And do remember, sex kills. No question. None. Sad to say. Sounds like a bumper sticker, but it's actually worse than that. So we have an increase also in brain, I won't call them diseases, let's call them brain assaults by the spike and other corollaries that are tied to the spike attained through either shedding and or being injected. The spike is the deadliest thing that humankind has ever created, if humankind totally created it alone. I have my own personal doubts on that. But it's bad. So be forewarned. Forewarned is forearmed. And you've got to, I'm seeing more masks out there. I think that's a good thing. Not a lot, but more people. They're taking this very seriously. And again, if a mask gives you only 10 or 20% of an advantage, more protection, take it. Take it. Don't play games. Are you there, partner?
I am.
What have you been doing? Just kicking back?
Trying to survive, you know, navigating the landscape.
The madness. The madness.
Yeah.
And it really is awful. No question. And it's getting worse. I wish I could say otherwise.
Well, you can start to see the numbers of sick people now is becoming quite noticeable.
Right. I think a lot of people who are out and about are looking even less. They're looking more troubled. I went out today a little bit. I looked at their faces, their demeanor. It's not good. Nobody's laughing anymore, of course, but I think a lot of people are really, they're battling any one of dozens of different symptomology that is generated by the shots and the shedding issue. You don't want this virus. It's a bad virus. It's a bioweapon virus. So just by way of repetition, I hope that sticks a little bit. We're seeing more and more cancers now, turbo cancers, huge numbers of turbo cancers. You're not seeing it in the mainstream media. You might see it somewhere in the alt media. I'm not seeing it there either, though. Not enough. This is a takedown of an entire civilization and a species. And it is taking a dreadful toll of human beings. And turbo doesn't just apply to cancer. We now have very strong reasons to suspect that turbo CJD is another issue. Turbo prion disease and destruction of the human brain. There are too many people showing up with fourth stage cancer, but what's worse is they haven't been obviously aware that their brain is being destroyed by prions. It's a silent, terrible, evil killer of people. Call it dementia, call it ALS, call it mad cow. I don't care. These are prion dangers that are everywhere. And if you have not been injected and you hang around the injected, expect that you may well be on the road. Maybe it's a slow road, a road toward prion infestation and ultimately death. No joke. That's how serious this is.
I would agree. I think that for the unvaxxed, you have to be mindful of how often you are being exposed to this, whether you have symptoms or not, because it can accumulate silently. And one day you may wake up and you know, have this gripping chest pain. I just read a report of, actually two reports, very similar, of young males, teenage males, unvaxxed, but attending school or sports programs with obviously vaxxed colleagues, and they both have myocarditis now. You know, presumably from sharing space with vaxxed counterparts.
Right. I remember I had asked you after you said that, but the line was gone. Are you getting any reports? Are we seeing any reports? I'm kind of speaking for both of us here. Where people who have had myocarditis, endocarditis, pericarditis, other heart issues that are tied up with this bioweapon virus and bioweapon injection, are you seeing any of these people reporting that they have somehow fought their way back to full and robust total heart health that they had before? Are you getting any of those stories?
I have seen
right.
Some. Some
you mentioned,
that were...
You mentioned one or two, so tell me what you got.
Well, these are people that, the ones that I can think of off the top of my head, were almost devoted athletes and were very tenacious about wanting to recover their health. And they both struggled through the allopathic care and, you know, really didn't get very far. You know, the whole common theme of being gaslit and told it's all in your head is very prominent. It doesn't seem to matter where you are. That's the script that you get when you go to a conventional allopathic doctor. And to make any progress in recovering, it seems you have to go outside of that system. Now, you know, what you choose to do is up to you. One actually went to a naturopath, and this woman was in Australia, and he actually made quite a bit of progress with her. And then the other one, I think, you know, they both did a lot on their own. They both had enough knowledge of human physiology to have some idea of how to navigate the injury.
Right.
But it took a lot of will and a lot of dedication, a lot of commitment. And they're at least as of now, I think it's still premature to say that there isn't permanent damage. I guess time will tell. But they're doing what they want to do.
Well, that's an encouraging note, even if it's just a couple of people. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes.
The injuries that people are sustaining with these injections are very variable. And so there's no protocol. There's no standard protocol.
Dozens potentially? Dozens?
Yeah. And uh-huh. Some people end up with heart issues. Others end up with neurological issues. What else? The cognitive issues are very prominent. Fatigue, the reactivation of these viruses the common ones that are reactivated in almost all of these people with these long-standing injuries are Lyme disease, and a lot of these people never even knew they had it, and then the Epstein-Barr. But I would also throw in there the other herpes viruses are also commonly active, too. Cytomegalovirus and HHV-6, human herpes virus 6, and that can affect the immune system. So it's a struggle, and because there is no standard presentation of the injury, there's no standard protocol for treating it, and so you really do need a tailored approach. You have to find out, you know, what your previous issues might have been that are now coming to the fore, and then dealing with those. And a lot of people are dealing with gut issues that they didn't think were a problem prior to the injury. And those need to be dealt with, biofilms, because those are standing in the way of recovery. There's no question.
Well, we think that the digestive tract is one of the primary targets of these bioweapons, in addition to all the rest,
yes.
The reproductive system, your major organs, good Lord, all the neurology in your body, the heart, lungs, the brain, it just goes on. This weapon is so inclusive of all the major things you rely upon to stay alive. It targets all of them. And it's all generally pushed by the spike, but there are other things involved as well. So it's not something you can play games with at all. You've got to get very serious very quickly if you begin to have any of these symptoms. And again, there are dozens. This is so diverse. It's diabolical is what it is. All right, let's go to a short video from Dr. William Mackus, who has been on the front line of these turbo cancer stories, and he's been very, very forthright about it. It's a short little clip, but the headline is simple. Oncologist says, I've never seen cancers behaving like this before. And this is a professional. And you've heard Dr. Mackus before on the program. He is he's top drawer. So here we go with this short one. Anything you want to add to that before I play it?
No, go ahead.
There are only a handful out of the 100,000 doctors, Canadian doctors, that didn't take the vaccine that are still practicing medicine. So it's something like 99.9% vaccination rate. And they were the first ones to line up for their vaccines.
Let me add something to that. And I've been saying this, so it's worth saying again. About, 2 years ago now, where the American health industry, all the professional health people were given basically a mandate option, either take the shot or get out. And one-third of them, approximately, in America, quit rather than take the shots. That left two-thirds to pick up the slack and fill out the health professional ranks, and they're all shot up. So think about that. We lost our unvaxxed health professionals in a very substantial way a couple years ago now. And that's why he mentioned in Canada there's a 99% rate of vaxxed health professionals. So we got about the same thing here.
And they're still enforcing those mandates.
Yes, it's insane. All right.
Well, as I started looking at the sudden deaths of Canadian doctors, I realized, yes, most of them are dying from cardiac issues, heart injuries, cardiac arrests, you know, dying while jogging or swimming, dying in their sleep. And Dr. Peter McCullough has talked about this extensively, about the myocarditis and the damage to the heart, the scarring to the heart. And then some were dying from blood clots, pulmonary emboli, strokes. But then there was quite a large subset of doctors who were developing extremely aggressive cancers. And cancers at an age that they shouldn't be getting. So, for example, there was a doctor who developed gastric cancer in his 30s, presented at stage 4, he was dead in less than a year. Very rare brain cancers in young individuals in their 20s and 30s, medical students, medical residents. And these cancers would always present at stage 4, and they would always kill them in a matter of a few months, and it was always less than a year. And, you know, at first I didn't know, you know, what the term for this was or what the phenomenon was. I just started, you know, really paying attention to it, tracking it. I then, you know, realized that this is being called turbo cancer by people on social media. Turbo cancer is not a medical term, but it's a term that people came up with to really describe the extremely aggressive nature of these cancers in the COVID vaccinated. And these cancers behave completely differently, unlike anything I've seen before in my career. And I've diagnosed over 20,000 cancer patients in my career with cutting edge PET CT, positron emission tomography imaging, CT, MRI, pathological correlation. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen stage 4 breast cancers presenting in women in their 20s. I've never seen stage 4 colon cancers presenting in men and women in their, you know, 20s, 30s. Leukemias that will kill you in a matter of days or even hours after diagnosis. Lymphomas that, again, kill you in a matter of months.
Kill you in a matter of days, hours, weeks, or months. And you heard it. These cancers do not act like normal cancers on a fast track. They're acting differently than normal cancers. So where do you look for a cause? What is the only common ground we have? Injection or infection from these bioweapons, either the vax or the injection. They're both bioweapons. This is a very horrifying thing to hear, and it should wake everyone up if you're not awake already. And most of you listening are. I don't know what else to say except we have something unique going on here in a very bad way. I've been saying it for a long time that I have a feeling, a hunch, that something was built into these bioweapons to create cancers in the human body that are different than normal, long-term, treatable cancers. And what Dr. Mack has just said, I think, underscores what I suggested, and I'm not a medical professional by any means, but I think that what I just heard suggests, again, that this is a mechanism of the bioweapons that have been deployed so prolifically all around the world. 13 billion injections, 600 million here in the U.S., and one more time, 80% of Americans have taken at least one shot. 70% are so-called fully vaxxed. That's two shots and a booster minimum. We got problems here. Go ahead and comment on this. I'm going to play that again. It's only 2 minutes. It's very, very vivid.
Well, now, you know, none of it comes as a surprise to me because this was what they found with the animal studies with this type of platform. Yeah, they all developed cancer.
Amazing. All right, here's Dr. William Makis again, M-A-K-I-S, if you're not looking at a screen here.
There are only a handful out of the 100,000 doctors, Canadian doctors, that didn't take the vaccine that are still practicing medicine. So it's something like 99.9% vaccination rate. And they were the first ones to line up for their vaccines. Well, as I started looking at the sudden deaths of Canadian doctors, I realized, yes, most of them are dying from cardiac issues, heart injuries, cardiac arrests, dying while jogging or swimming, dying in their sleep. And Dr. Peter McCullough has talked about this extensively, about the myocarditis and the damage to the heart, the scarring to the heart. And then some were dying from blood clots, pulmonary emboli, strokes. But then there was quite a large subset of doctors who were developing extremely aggressive cancers. And cancers at an age that they shouldn't be getting. So, for example, there was a doctor who developed gastric cancer in his 30s. Presented at stage 4, he was dead in less than a year. Very rare brain cancers in young individuals in their 20s and 30s, medical students, medical residents. And these cancers would always present at stage 4, and they would always kill them in a matter of a few months, and it was always less than a year. And, you know, at first I didn't know, you know, what the term for this was or what the phenomenon was. I just started, you know, really paying attention to it, tracking it. I then, you know, realized that this is being called turbo cancer by people on social media. A turbo cancer is not a medical term, but it's a term that people came up with to really describe the extremely aggressive nature of these cancers in the COVID vaccinated. And these cancers behave completely differently, unlike anything I've seen before in my career. And I've diagnosed over 20,000 cancer patients in my career with cutting edge PET CT, positron emission tomography imaging, CT, MRI, pathological correlation. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen stage 4 breast cancers presenting in women in their 20s. I've never seen stage 4 colon cancers presenting in men and women in their, you know, 20s, 30s. Leukemias that will kill you in a matter of days or even hours after diagnosis. Lymphomas that, again, kill you in a matter of months.
A matter of hours after diagnosis. This is not usual. There's nothing usual about this. Nothing normal. It's completely off the wall crazy. But it was designed to do exactly what it's doing. It's a deployed weapon. Don't ever buy into the thing about those who say it's some kind of a failed vaccine or a defective vaccine. No. This was perfected and released, and the Japanese have proven that every primary type configuration,
every named variant,
every one, and the subvariants too, apparently all come from a lab, and they've all been released. It's war against humanity. That's what
it is. Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that these pharmaceutical companies now are pivoting towards treatments for cancer and prion diseases.
And they'll be very expensive. Yes. How are you going to come up with a cure for mad cow? Come on.
Well, again, you know, we don't need a cure. We just need treatment.
We don't want a cure.
That's where they make their money.
No, there's no community. I used to say this long ago. There's no money to be made in curing cancer.
That's right.
The real money is string the patient along as much as possible, milk their insurance company to the max, take their own private wealth, drain them, and then bury them. That's what Rockefeller medicine does. It's sickening. Sickening beyond measure. All right, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, so-called. You're hearing that more and more now. We're hearing more CJD than ever. But they're all basically in the same general basket. These are prion issues. Remember how the spike protein has 7 sequences, peptides, on the outside of it. And if it bumps into your body's normal, natural prion proteins, it will flip those normal, harmless prion proteins into a misfolded configuration, and they will go to work beginning to flip other proteins into a very disastrous, well, they'll end up in the brain, most of them. They love the neurology. These misfolded proteins are just, they're deadly. That's where it's coming from the spike. And then from the proteins that are misfolded, they can go on and do it again to any protein they run into. Here's an ALS story from the CHD bus tour. Go ahead and set this up.
Okay, so just for clarification, the ALS is a protein misfolding disease that affects the motor neurons. So it typically presents with numbness or weakness, lack of feeling in the lower extremities, and then moves up. But there's another one called bulbar ALS that starts. I think the presentations are more in the head and neck, like trouble swallowing, trouble articulating. But anyway, it's a devastating disease. I don't want to say it's incurable, because we do have cases of remission with this. There's a prominent doctor at Duke University, a Dr. Rick Bedlack, who is compiling cases of remission of ALS, recovery. So I won't say it's, you know, an intractable one, but it's nonetheless a, you know, pretty dismal diagnosis to get. And the other thing to remember is that oftentimes ALS is misdiagnosed as Lyme disease is often misdiagnosed as ALS. So anybody that is been given a diagnosis of ALS should definitely be checked thoroughly for Lyme. But anyway, so we know that there have been cases of ALS that have happened post-injection with this bioweapon, and it's no surprise because of the propensity for the spike protein to induce this protein misfolding, depending on which organ system it ends up in. So this was an interview with a sister of someone who had that happen, and it really, really is tragic.
Remember, this is a very quiet disease, we'll call it. It's really an assault from the bioweapon on the brain. The brain has been targeted. Make no mistake about it. Targeted. Like the body, it's all overall physiology targeted for cancers. When you're told you've got leukemia and you're dead in a few hours, something's wrong with that picture. But all the while in the background, these prion proteins can very well be at work in your brain and my brain right now, either through shedding or being vaxxed, and you won't know it until you start walking into walls and forget how to get home when you go outside for a walk. Those are very disturbing, those stories. Mm. And using their cell phone and GPS to find their way home when they go out for a walk with a dog in their own neighborhoods? No. And mm-hmm. They're driving cars? Think vaccidents.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Here we go.
My name is Sharon Schwanz.
And this is about your sister.
It is. My sister, Donna Stillman.
How old was she?
She was 58 when she passed.
Okay. So she decided to take the Pfizer shot. Did you take the COVID shot?
I did not.
But she, what was her feeling on this whole thing?
She was very, I mean, I guess I would call my sister kind of a hypochondriac. You know, I came from a medical family, educated, college educated. My father is a infectious disease doctor, always big pharma. I mean, that's kind of how I was raised. I vaccinated my children, certainly not an anti-vaxxer by any means. But when my sister, the COVID, started happening, she was absolutely going to be one of the first people in line to get the vaccine.
All right. So she had three in all?
Three in all that I know of. Yeah. Yeah. She got the first two and then she had surgery. So she wanted to take the booster before she had surgery.
So when did she start to feel ill and how did we get to the diagnosis of ALS and why do you think that's Pfizer shot.
Yeah, well, so she took the first one in 2021. She was a very, really, really healthy, active, thin, fit woman. You know, she took her dog for 5-mile walks. She was always, working out, doing some kind of exercise, some kind of activity. And she got the first one, and she told me that she started getting weakness in her legs. And she told me that maybe I'm working out too hard, maybe I'm doing too much, that kind of thing. And I just thought, a little concerned, obviously. Time went on. I think you have to wait. I don't know how many weeks it is until you get the second one. But I think it was 6 weeks or 8 weeks. But she did get the second one, and her symptoms started getting progressively worse. She told me that she started getting... her back was hurting. She started having drop foot. Really her foot was starting to go numb where she couldn't.
This is what you were saying about ALS being a physiologically debilitating thing. First of all, I guess muscular control goes. That's what
she's saying. And it ascends up and eventually you die because the muscles that control breathing stop working.
Yeah.
Bit. She would have twitching all throughout her spine and back, weakness in her hands.
Let me say, excuse me, but one more thing. How many times have we read stories of people talking about twitching, muscles jumping, restless leg, whatever?
Right.
Very common. So these are clearly neurological issues in your body.
Yep.
Numbness, just a whole gamut of symptoms that did not make any sense for somebody that had been previously, 3 months prior, a very, very healthy person.
Did you discuss at this point that, did you say to her, look, it's the shot?
I did.
What did you say?
I did. She kind of just brushed it off. She did. And I just said, well, I just, you really want to, maybe do something, try to detox her body or do something to, she was very, no, it's got to be something else. It's got to be something else. So she kept having all these tests done, the EMG tests where, they put needles in your hands and in your feet, very painful, trying to come to some kind of diagnosis. Nothing was coming up. She had physical therapy, to try to get some of her movement back in her feet and her lower back. She was in pain all the time. She was starting to have problems moving her hands. She wasn't able to... At that point, she started using a walker. When I saw her I saw her in March of 22, was after... she had surgery, I should back up. In January of 22, she ended up having surgery to try to repair some of the, she had bone on bone in her lower back to see if they could repair the nerve damage. And ultimately, it didn't really help very much. It helped for a little while. She ultimately got the diagnosis in April of 22 of ALS. And the whole time, things just kept getting worse. It was like it was on, fast speed. I mean, she couldn't drive anymore. She couldn't go to the bathroom by herself. She couldn't cook meals. She couldn't go up and down the stairs anymore.
And that was from March until April, right? Isn't that what she said?
The following year, I think.
Uh-huh. So 1 year, and she's just wiped out, basically.
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
That sounds rather turbo-ish to me.
Does she understand now that it's the Pfizer?
At that point, I think she started putting two and two together a little bit. You know, her son kept saying, "Mom, I think this is from the vaccine. It's got to be from the vaccine." And I think she was, I just don't know at that point if she was in denial. She just didn't want to know. Kind of it had been too late. But I think that diagnosis for her was kind of it. I think that was when she just kind of gave up. I kept saying to her, I said, "Well, Donna, why don't we do some kind of out of the box things?" Because the neurologist that diagnosed her said, well, you know, she lived in Tucson, said, "Well, you can go to Phoenix and do some trials, some medicine trials, you know?" And she said, "Yeah, I don't think I want to do that." So why don't you do some other things? I mean, there are some successful stories, hyperbaric oxygen and some different, you know, modalities, stem cells, you know, that kind of thing. I told her, "I'll come get you. I'll take you to, you know, to these appointments." And one, you know, some of the stem cells were in Mexico. And she said, "Well, Sharon, I'm too sick to travel." So, you know, I think that finally she just threw in the towel. After you get that diagnosis, which is probably the worst diagnosis you could probably get, I would imagine. I mean, that would be up there. Other than maybe brain tumor or something, she gave up. She just gave up. She, you know, and then they brought in a hospital bed into her house. She had people coming in and out, people she didn't know, to try to take care of her and cook meals for her. And, you know, I remember when I last saw her in May of 22, she was putting her hair up in a scrunchie kind of thing. And she just pulled something just by doing that. And she couldn't sleep. The twitching all over her body was absolutely terrible. There was nothing that was helping it. She just became a shell of herself after these vaccines. And I'm pretty sure it affected her. Her brain also, I mean, just the depression and the anxiety, not being able to do anything, go anywhere. You know, everybody, her husband and son had to basically be her caregivers. Yeah, her at the time 17-year-old son had to watch Donna go from...
I'm sure the people have...
Yeah.
Beautiful sister.
Thank you. She was 58 when she passed. So it was really, 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 and this was us before a wedding up in Napa, you know, wine tasting. She loved to travel. We went to Hawaii in right before this wedding, actually, to the Big Island. And, you know, before she died, she said she just wanted to be with the turtles. And...
Okay, there's another story, and there are countless millions of these, tens of millions. Ultimately, they're going to be hundreds of millions. This bioweapon was designed to take people out in the most horrible ways, and there are dozens of them. They're awful. There's no mercy in this bioweapon attack on human beings. This is ruthless, satanic evil, the way these people are made to suffer. And all of them, and again, I don't even know how many there are. There are dozens of ways that... people could literally begin to fall apart and disintegrate. It's an awful way out.
Yeah, and the show goes on.
The show is going to go on, unfortunately, for a long time. And I don't know if you out there are noticing it, but we are, as I mentioned, seeing an increase. No question that things are building. They're getting worse. More and more people now are 3-4 years in, and the symptoms are, they're not abating. They're intensifying, and they're proliferating. They're spreading into other organ systems in the body and other venues. So I always remember that alleged leaked CCP video from Communist China. I should probably repost that just for fun. He said, the one guy, and speaking in Chinese, and I had it checked, the translation was accurate. Somebody asked this guy, it was a video conference, what about the Americans? And he laughed, not har-har, but he chuckled. He said, the Americans? He said, don't worry about the Americans. Every American who has taken a shot is going to die. That's what he said. Now, it may not be every single one, but it sure as hell is way up there in the percentages. It's a weapon. We can't ever forget that. All right, let's go take a look at our human chronicles. And like we just heard, a very interesting story. It does seem almost like the brain, CJD, ALS, and other brain issues, neurological issues, are becoming a little more prominent. We're not hearing so much about amyloid clots as we were about microclotting. They're still going on, but I think it's a question of time. And after 3-4 years, these prions have built up in the neurology, and they're really beginning to decimate it. And I think that's what is becoming, from my perspective, even more ominous right now. It's not good.
Well, I would say, too, I've noticed in the CJD support groups, there's new people coming in every day now, and it did not used to be like that. You know, this was a sleepy little group, as you can imagine, because, I think the statistic for CJD was one in,
I don't want to say a million.
It was extremely rare.
Yes. It was almost a non-issue.
So this group was very, very stable for many years. But in the past 2 years, and the admin in one of the groups even put out an announcement, was it 2 years ago maybe? Is it just me I've never had, such a demand for new people wanting to come into this group. And now it's very noticeable. The welcome mat is being rolled out every day, sometimes for two or three people at a time. So that is an indicator. Now, of course, you cannot diagnose CJD until, actually at autopsy, but the testing for it, the diagnostics for it, is getting better at accuracy. So there's, if somebody's been given that diagnosis, it's probably fairly reliable. But what it's known for is just the speed at which it develops. Once symptoms appear, the progression is very rapid.
It's a cascade.
Unlike with Alzheimer's, it can right. progress over a long period of time. But with CJD, it's weeks to months, and I think they said 18 months at the most.
Mm-hmm.
For someone's decline.
Well, and remember what Dr. Mack has talked about, these turbo cancers, diagnosis to death, in some cases, weeks.
Yeah.
So there's some very strange, unprecedented things going on in terms of severe, fatal pathologies in the body. All right. COVID vaccine injury and support group. Go ahead, take the first one there.
Let's see. Okay.
Brain damage from the vax.
Hi, I am one Pfizer, 2.5 years in. I have ME and CFS, dysautonomia, and SFN, small fiber neuropathy. Hi, I've been experiencing episodes of complete blanking. I think like dementia. I do not know where I am, who I am, what basic things around me are. Even the concept of language and words are gone. It lasts about 30 seconds to a minute, and they are pretty scary. When I come back, I am disoriented and confused, but start to feel better lying down and having a drink of water. I assumed it was related to POTS or hypotension, but now I have seen a second cardiologist. Both have said, because I am not dizzy either before, during, or after, it's probably not a blood flow issue or a brain issue. The first doctor suggested absent seizures. The second doctor said something else that sounded similar, but I can't remember. duh. My neurologist said unlikely to be absent seizures as related to epilepsy. And as I have so much else going on, improbable to be something new. Has anyone experienced something similar? What avenue did you go down for diagnosis and treatment? Edit to add, thank you for your thoughts. I have researched further, and I believe the syndrome I need to formally investigate is focal impaired awareness seizures. I have also joined an epilepsy group, as this is a form of epilepsy, and from reading others' experiences, this very closely matches mine. I hope this helps someone else.
All right, the next one. Could it be a panic attack? I've been having them since I was injured, Max injured, and my symptoms present similar to yours. And the person responds to that, I don't believe so. I don't feel like I have a racing heart or any feeling of panic either before or during an episode. It feels like I am aware. My eyes are open. I can register a sensation of touch, but I have no connection with anything. It's like I'm an alien life form temporarily inhabiting my body. For example, during an episode, I will look around and have no idea what anything is. No word or concept in my brain for anything I see. Cupboard, sink, floor, hand, nothing. I feel confused but still calm and realize I exist. And I try to understand who or what I am, but I have no language or word for it or for me. This sort of cycles around until words and memory start to come back. I am usually disoriented after an episode, and it is scary. But during an episode, I am not scared because I guess I am vacant or empty. But I remember what happened. If people are talking to me, I can hear them, but I can't process what they are saying or how I should even respond. And one comment to that, I have the exact same episodes. It is like my brain is zooming out until blank, like complete zen, like being suspended in nothingness. I usually sleep afterwards and wake up okay, like my brain has somehow done a reset. From what I've read, it seems to be a petit mal episode. That's a small seizure as opposed to a grand mal. But I'm sure it's more than that. This is very alarming. These are brain injuries and brain stories, which are becoming quite common now. Go ahead.
Another person says, I think this is what I get, too. Here's my description from a medical update. Is it similar? These are so common that I am very calm during them. I could not describe this experience for 14 months as I was too gone during an episode, but no one noticed. I found I was talking through them. I've been told it's like kind of a combo of absent seizure and epilepsy, but it does not fit either category, and they are not fun. I'm sorry you get this too.
See, people are not overtly talking about these things. This group... Thank goodness for this group, or they would have nobody to talk to, nowhere to go. But you can see that this is apparently not an uncommon brain mm-hmm. problem in people. Go ahead with the next one.
Original poster says, yes, very similar. And I think, if I am reading your statement correctly, I too have moved from blackout faint to gray-white conscious aware fall, but as the pass-out episodes seem to have lessened, these vacant dementia episodes have increased. As I also have POTS, the passing out could be explained by heart rate and blood pressure regulation, so I assume the dementia episodes were also related. But now I have had two cardiologists say they are not linked. I also get slurred speech and cognitive confusion, but haven't noticed any abnormal taste sensation. I will monitor next time. Did you go through a neurologist or have an EEG for diagnosis? Thanks for sharing.
And the next one. It happens to me. I go somewhere. Plus, I've had a few actual seizures, and I passed out in the kitchen the other day and have zero knowledge of it. I didn't feel dizzy. I just woke up on the kitchen floor and have absolutely zero recollection of it. Interestingly, there's a few papers out now linking epilepsy to the spike. Comment to that. I've been having something similar. 2.5 years now. I used to get over them quickly, but now it takes weeks until I come to semi-normal status again. Comment to that. In hopes of being reassuring, I got so bad that I left the house to get groceries. I went to Whole Foods. In the middle of the store, I suddenly had no idea where I was or why, and I didn't even know what a grocery store was. For me, the answer was natokinase, serapeptase, and vimpocetine.
Vimpocetine, yep.
I was close, damn it. I took the first two for about a month before adding the Vimpo. I knew I had terrible circulatory problems by the black jelly that I... By the black jelly that didn't flow out of a cut. In other words, she was so sludge blood, she cut herself and it was like very dark jelly. Things got much better when that was sorted out. Another person adds, this happened to me also. Of course, I panicked afterward and won't leave the house alone now. How many people are out there suffering these kinds of neurological brain problems? They're driving. Some of them are driving, make no mistake. They live alone.
And these are, tragically, fairly young people. These are not elderly geriatrics. They're young. They were healthy before this.
This group is going to become, I think, if not dominant, certainly as big as any group out there, the brain damage CJD group.
On the heels of that, let's read this last one, stigmatized and ostracized, to give a feeling of an idea of how these people are being treated. And this is just, again, tragic.
Go ahead.
This young woman says, I just had one of my first people message me to tell me they were unfriending me because I was spreading, quote, misinformation by sharing the REACT-19 research study.
Oh, please. That's sick of me.
I am sure I have had people unfriend me in the past, but she was the first person to message me and tell me about it. I am pissed. That's the last thing I wanted to wake up to this morning. How dare she say my personal lived experience is misinformation? She doesn't know the hell I have been through. And now I have 3 job offers, and some of them are mandating the flu shot. I'm not against the flu shot, but I am done personally. I am never putting anything like that in my body again, and now it's affecting my job options. I am so livid. This experience for me is like the gift that keeps on giving. Ugh.
See, here's two things here. One, the whole idea of putting yourself in a position where someone can unfriend you and you take it seriously. Why the hell should you care? Don't set yourself up for that kind
no.
of abuse. If you go into these groups, don't care about anyone else. If you want to add information, submit information, try to help people with your experience, fine. That's a very cruel thing, and people use that, I'm sure, to be cruel
to
other people.
That's an indication of, number one, the lack of empathy.
None, zero.
On the part of, you know, people in your world.
Right.
And I think they're pushing these people away because they don't want to acknowledge or accept that these things are as bad as they are, and they, too, could be affected this way.
Maybe worse,
who knows?
This woman has 3 job interviews, 3 job offers. See, the point is, these poor people, and there are so many of them, with this growing background prion damage to the brain and the neurology, are out there functioning in society. You won't know by looking at them. And they're not going to tell you. That's their business. But if they're out driving cars and doing other things that can endanger people, there's a big risk here. You've got to really be careful out there, whether you're afflicted or not.
Yeah.
You have to be careful.
Yeah.
These are dangerous times. Well, those are very interesting. I think we should kind of stay on this for all. These are prion injuries, what we're hearing, and they're progressive.
Well, you know, it doesn't have to be prions. Like we said the other night, there are many pathways to brain injury with these things.
You got it. All right. Well, there's another honest update. It's not cheerful, but it's what's going on and what your media will not tell you about. So thank you. Good job, as always, and we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
We'll be back with another hour for you. Coming up next, Brother Nathaniel and Lori Kaufman, special guests, so stay tuned for that.